Okay, good evening. What I'm trying to do tonight and to continue for the next while is to completely change the format of what we've been doing on Wednesday nights. Since I've been in the shul, which is now, oh my gosh, like we have completed 6 years that I'm here in the shul. What?
Time flies.
So Wednesday nights for the last 6 years we have been giving shiurim on topics of halacha. I love halacha. It's really what I do almost all day. But I realized at some point that, you know, as my Rebbe teacher, Shul Rabbi, when I was growing up, Rabbi Wurzberger, used to tell me, he said, you know, if you only learn Gemara and you don't learn Tanakh, you can be a Talmud Chacham Midrabbanon, but I'm a Oretz Midoraisa. Right? His line was that if you don't really know any Tanakh, so you're going to be ignorant, and the ignorance will be ignorance of some of the most basic ideas in Judaism, which, honestly, I'm a yeshiva guy, and I really feel like I don't know Tanakh. And one of my goals, I hope you'll oblige me, is that by saying the shiurim, it will force me to engage with Tanakh, which is something I have not really done ever. Now, why are we starting from Lachim? Why don't we start from Yehoshua and Shoftim and Shmuel, earlier books? So the basic answer is, well, for a number of years I was teaching in a program in Yeshiva University called the BMP. And in BMP I taught some Navi, two mornings a week, and I taught Yehoshua, Shoftim, and Shmuel. But I never taught Lachim. So what I'm trying to do is to kind of fill in the lacuna in my own education. And I once again, I thank you for allowing me to do that. So what we have on our agenda tonight is to introduce Sefer Melachim. Sefer Melachim is the book in Tanakh, with the exception of Divrei Hayomim. Now, I say Sefer Melachim, by the way, because it's not Melachim Aleph and Melachim Beis. That's a very modern development. In fact, in the Das Mikra Tanakh, you know, the pink set of Tanakh? So they make a point. They have two volumes of Sefer Melachim, but they don't divide it up, Melachim Aleph, Melachim Beis, the way it's traditionally divided up, because that's not the Jewish division of it. They say the Jewish division is that it's all one book. Sefer Melachim is one book. Das Mikra, therefore, divides the two volumes, because it would be like a volume this fat. You know, you couldn't really have a book like that. So they divide it up in the place that makes more sense logically, which is like, I think, four prakim before the end of Melachim Aleph is where they begin their second volume. It's very clear in the introduction to Das Mikra, spends time at this, that Sefer Melachim is a single volume. It's a single book. It is the book in Tanakh, with the exception of Divrei Hayamim, that spans the most time. Sefer Melachim deals with all of the kings, basically from Shlomo until Korban Bayis. That's an awful long period of time. We are talking about from the construction of the Beis HaMikdash to the destruction, over 400 years. That's a chunk of time. That's a chunk of time. Now, you might ask that Sefer Shoftim has a very considerable amount of time also, but it's not as clear in Sefer Shoftim how much time there is. Divrei Hayomim certainly has more time, but Melachim has a huge amount of time, and there's a huge amount of kings that are covered in Melachim from Shlomo onward. You had a comment?
Doesn't Shmuel talk about one of the kings also?
Shmuel talks about one king, King David. Well, a few kings. King Shaul and Ishbosheth, who's kind of the little guy who always gets forgotten about, and King David. That's really the focus of Shmuel. And in fact, the real question I think we have to ponder now is, why on earth are there two books of Shmuel and Melachim? It would make sense if I have a book called Melachim that I should have Shaul and Ishbosheth and David, and I should have Eli and Shmuel, who are the last Shoftim, as part of the book of Shoftim. It doesn't make sense that you have a book called, and by the way, in the Gemara Baba Basra, Daf Yudalid, the Gemara tells us Sidron Shel Neviim, what are all the Sfarim, etc. There is a Sefer called Shmuel, a Sefer called Melachim. How come it's not a single book? This is the million-dollar question. Everyone and their uncle discusses this question at length. Probably the best article on this is in the Gush Torah Journal. I think it's called Migadim. Rav Yaakov Meidan, who's now one of the Rosh Yeshiva on the Gush, Rav Meidan argues that what defines Sefer Shmuel as being a Sefer is that is the book that deals with the Aron not being in its place. Right at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, they have this war against Plishtim. The Aron is captured.
Right?
And then, the real place for the Aron should be, I don't know if the New York Times would agree, but let's say it. Right? We know where the real place for the Aron should be. Right? In the Kodesh Kodashim. By the way, for the record, this on tape, we believe, and we have evidence, that the Jewish temples actually stood on Mount Moriah. Okay? If you disagree with me, you're wrong. Or you read the Times. Now, either way, the fact is, Sefer Shmuel is a book about the Beis Hamik, about the Aron not being in its place. And at the very end of Sefer Shmuel, what we encounter is David HaMelech purchases the silo, the Goren of Aravna Haivusi. And when he purchases that, that becomes the future home of the Beis HaMikdash. And that's where the Aron is going to reside. And then Sefer Shmuel ends. And then Sefer Melachim begins. The amazing thing is that David HaMelech spans both Sefer Shmuel and Sefer Melachim. No? You would think, hello, you're writing a book. Like, okay, let's get the characters straight. Right? David HaMelech, though, is in Sefer Shmuel, and he's in Sefer Melachim. What's going on here? Why is David in both? The answer is because Sefer Shmuel, Rav Meidan explains, is about the Aron going from, the Aron finding its place, as it were, right? And once the Aron finds its place, Shmuel closes, but David lebt noch. He's still alive. And once David is still alive, so therefore, what we do is we begin Sefer Melachim with a story about David. V'hamelach David zokeim ba b'ayamim v'yichasuhu b'abgadim v'lo yicham lo. Right, the beginning of Melachim says that David HaMelech is old. Right, you have the Pesukim, you have Perek Aleph of Melachim right in front of you. We'll talk about, we'll ask you to read it in a few minutes and we'll make a few comments. But the fact is, it begins with David HaMelech, which seemingly does not make sense. The answer is that Melachim is not really about all the kings. It's really about what happened to the Jewish people post the Aron being in its place. That's Rav Meidan's argument. I think it's interesting. Like many of the arguments, maybe you can take it, you can leave it, but it's certainly interesting. Now, I want to argue that Sefer Melachim is really not about David at all. It's really only about Shlomo. And the first two chapters of Melachim that have to do with David are really there in order to establish Shlomo as king. Okay? So just to give it away, Shlomo is going to be the next king. Okay? Gotcha. Right? Now, what characteristics did Shlomo HaMelech have by virtue of which he was appointed the next king? Why is Shlomo chosen to be the king? David is sick, he's old, we have succession that has to take place. By the way, chapter 1 of Melachim is the Haftorah for Parashas Chayei Sarah. Chayei Sarah is about Avram Avinu dying and preparing succession, Yitzchak. No? And the marriage of Yitzchak and, right? That's what Chayei Sarah is really about. Fascinating. That it's about succession, but why is it that Shlomo is the successor of his father, successor of David, and no one else? What does Perek Aleph of Melachim teach me about Shlomo? Okay, so look at the Perek. You could glance at it. It'll take you 4 minutes, and try to find what it is that Shlomo did. You gotta read it first. Yeah.
A different theory.
Okay.
And Shlomo shouldn't have been the king because his father sinned.
His father was?
His father sinned, and they took the kingship away from Shaul because he sinned.
His father was? I missed it.
Shlomo, his father sinned.
His father, he sinned.
Yes.
Who sinned? David sinned.
Yes.
We'll talk about that. We'll talk about that theory in a few minutes, yes.
The first baby died from Bathsheba.
The first baby from Bathsheba died, right. And they have that avelos, right? Absolutely. Why is Shlomo the king? What does it say about Shlomo? That's the first question to address. Also, while you read through this section, just think about what the heck is the connection between the story of Avishag HaShunamit, fascinating and funny story, no? David can't warm himself up. They have an internet, a national at least, search, and they find a pretty young woman, and she's going to be the sochenet for David. And this is not rated G, right? Now, v'hamelech lo yida'a, but Dashon, it's at least, it's PG, no?
I'll give you that.
I mean, this is not a Disney production. Right? It's not rated G. So now, what connection is there between the beginning of the perek and what continues after? So these are the two questions that we have to address. What does Shlomo have to do with anything? And basically what I'm trying to force you to do is just read the perek for a minute, and then we'll start talking. So there's a promise to Bathsheba that features very prominently, but is that anything about Shlomo and about Shlomo's qualities? No.
Yeah,
Dashiell?
Yeah, there's really a counter coup going on. It seems that David the Melech is drifted from practical reality, so he has to be kind of,
We have to move him back into a reality, like, and Nosson and Bathsheba are working on that, absolutely. So
he seems to be kind of silent.
But what is it about Shlomo? Want to say it, Lottie and then Louisa?
He's very intelligent. I mean,
we know Shlomo's very intelligent. Got. But where does it say that in this chapter? Right? If I'd be writing a book and I'd say the next king is going to be Shlomo, I'd begin by saying super intelligent Shlomo. Right? But
there's a promise about
Sheva. That's all I see. There's a promise. And what? Aliza? Right, and we see absolutely nothing about Shlomo besides the fact that he forgave Adoniyahu. That's right. There's nothing in this perek about Shlomo. And that is fascinating. No? There's a promise. By the way, the word Bathsheba, daughter of, right, so I have a niece named Bathsheba because she's a placeholder. She's number 7 in the family. So they named her Bathsheba. But Bathsheba could be daughter of a Shavua, right? Of a promise, that the promise features very prominently. We do not see where this promise is made. It's just referred to. There might be a pasuk in Divrei HaYomim which could be interpreted as the Shavua. It could be, but not abundantly clear. The fact is, we don't see qualities of Shlomo HaMelech for which he was appointed as king. But what do I see in this perek?
Maybe his modesty, because his father is sick and old, vulnerable. He doesn't come forward
to claim the crown. Ah! In other words, I see a contract named, right, Adoniyah ben Chagis, who's really, really the foil, the antithesis of what Klal Yisrael needs as a king.
And Avshalom.
Right? And Avshalom. Now, now we're talking. Adoniyah, right? David HaMelech had a son, Avshalom, who in Shmuel Beis Pereg, Yudal Tesvav Tezayin, rebelled against daddy. Right? Avshalom is, I would say, if not the epitome of evil, quite close to it. He is a bad guy. And there are many similarities between Adoniyah and Avshalom. Right? The similarities are as follows. How is Avshalom described in Tanakh? He's gorgeous. He's gorgeous, no? He had hair. right? Beautiful hair. Right? Obviously, he wasn't a Jewish man. Jewish men don't really have much hair. Right? I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened. But you have... Right? So this is...
You're from Alicia.
Huh? You're from Alicia. Kereach, right? I'm baldy. Avshalom is beautiful. The pasuk describes Avshalom's revolt as being a revolt where he has 50 people running in front of him, Chabishim ish ratzim lafanav, and he also has chariots in front of him. Now, what does Adoniyah have? Right, pasuk hey, Adoniyah ben Chagit mitnasei lemar. The word mitnasei means he puts himself up on airs. There's like a degree of gaiva. He says, I'm going to be the king. And he makes for himself chariots and 50 people running in front of him. That is an exact parallel to Avshalom. Right? Now, the contrast to Shlomo is, how does Shlomo go to his own coronation? What animal does Shlomo ride to his coronation? A... Where is it? What pasuk is it? I didn't hear. Mem Zayin. Then what? Lamed Gimel. That's right. So they ride v'herkavtem as Shlomo b'ni al hapirda asher li. Let him ride on the mule. Now, riding a mule is not particularly impressive. No. A mule is a slow-moving, like, not a good-looking animal, right? And this is the king riding to his coronation, right, on a Bartholomew, right? He's riding on a mule.
Eeyore.
Huh?
Well, Eeyore.
Eeyore. Now, in the Dat Mikra Tanakh, they explain, I'm sure many of you have been to Silwan. Like, that's Ir David, right down the hill. If you want to get down there, you can't really ride big animals because it's very narrow and curvy, so, and you can't go too fast, so riding a mule makes sense. And that's where he's going. So it could be it was just practical, but we also see a degree of humility, which is unlike Adoniyah, who is all about the heirs, Misnasei Lemar, Shlomo is certainly not like that. The true extent of Shlomo's humility is we don't see anything about Shlomo in this parak. That's one thing. Now, so we have similarities between Adoniyah and Avshalom. There's some other similarities, though, which we'll try to explain right now, and that involves the difficult episode at the beginning of the parak with Avishag HaShunamis. No? David HaMelech is old. Apparently he has some illness. Right? I think Dashiell mentioned before, he seems to be really out of it. Right? So they decide that they're going to hire a young woman to be a sochenet for him. A sochenet can mean different things. Rashi translates sochenet as someone who warms him up. It's almost like a hot water bottle, almost. But right, that is like what sochenet is according to Rashi. Others assume that sochenet is someone who gathers stuff, basically someone who will gather all the household items and take care of him. There are many explanations what sochenet is. It means like a companion, an aide, someone who helps him. Now, I don't know about you, but if I would need a aid to take care of me. So how do I find an aid? How do you find a home aid?
Through an agency.
What? Through an agency. Through an agency. Right? Do you do a national search? We need to find an aid. Presumably.
We're talking
about
a king.
What?
But we're talking about
a king. So if anything, I would say assume that a king has better connections to the agencies. You call the best agencies and you say, give me your best home attendant, right? Why on earth is there a national search, right? That's the pasuk, very pasuk gimel. Vayvakshu nara yofa b'chol gvul Yisrael. They search for a beautiful girl, a beautiful young woman. Yeah.
Well, you gotta give people the sense that there's an empire that they belong to,
And you can have many people in tribes who live in Concord by the kingdom of David.
Okay, so we got to give. So,
and
by the way, we have a parallel in Tanakh to searching for a very pretty girl throughout the country. Achashverosh with Esther. Elisa, what do you want to say? Right? That is a parallel in Tanakh, but that's not a parallel we really want to bring up in the context of David HaMelech. Right? David HaMelech is Ne'im Zmiros Yisrael. I mean, this man wrote to Helen. This man is Kodesh Kodoshim. Right? It's very hard, and right, there's also Pasuk Beis says that they tell the king that you should look for a girl, not a Rabbisula. And then in Pasuk Gimel, it seems like they are distorting what they told David in Pasuk Beis, because they look for a Na'ara Yafa, a pretty girl. In Pasuk Beis, it doesn't say that they tell David, we have to get a pretty girl for you. Now, then Pasuk Dalet ups the ante even. Pasuk Dalet says that they find a gorgeous girl. Hana'ara yafa ad ma'od. Right? You see, in the three psukim, we go from just na'ara to na'ara yafa to super gorgeous, drop dead. Right?
They limited the search.
What?
Well, that's
the search. And they engage this search. Right? Like, this is unbelievable. What on earth is going on here?
I think the point is that precisely that nothing happens to show how out of it he was.
So the point is that nothing happened despite the fact that to show how out of it David is, or we could have a slightly different interpretation, right, in a minute. But the fact is, this search is really, really interesting. Now, who is conducting this search? Avdei HaMelech, right? Pasuk Beis, Vayomru lo avadav, the servants say, let's look for a girl for you. It seems like the idea is coming from them. And then they conduct the search and they keep on upping the ante as we go through the psukim. Where else do we see Avdei HaMelech in this perek? Where else is Avdei HaMelech? Where else do they feature? This is a point that Rav Alex Israel makes, actually, in one of his shiurim, which is found on the Gush website.
The two Kohanim?
The two Kohanim. Keep on going. Look at Pasuk Tes. Look at Pasuk Tes. Adoniyahu sacrifices karbanos, right, in this place called Eben Zocheles, which is near Ein Rogel. He calls everybody to join him, and he calls Kol Anshe Yehuda Avdei HaMelech. So Avdei HaMelech, the fact that it appears so close after, might be a code word for saying that these are Adoniyah guys. The people who are conducting the search might be loyalists to the uprising, if there's such a term. How do you call loyalists to the uprising? We call them traitors. What? Okay.
Two guys.
Now, what do I see over here? This is good. They are trying to undermine the king by proving to the entire nation that our king is over ubatal. He can't do nothing anymore. How do I prove to the entire nation that my king can't do nothing? I make, right, I have, right, America's Got Talent or something. Right, Israel, right, the next supermodel, whatever the, right?
Miss America
pageant. And you ask everyone to submit. And people say, oh, why are we submitting names of all these gorgeous girls? Oh, because the king, he's really sick. He needs someone absolutely gorgeous. Now, first of all, the whole thing almost sounds ludicrous. Right? If the king is sick and needs to be warmed up, David HaMelech had how many wives?
18
wives. Chazal say lo yavam al nashim means he can't have more than 18. David had 18 wives. We'll talk about a Gemara about this in a few minutes. Presumably, among his 18 wives, he could have found somebody. Right? But, right, Rav Alex Israel's argument is, you know what? It's not about David's health. The Avdei HaMelech, who are people who are maneuvering to get Adoniyah to become the king, they are trying to prove just how feeble David HaMelech is. And that's really the unwritten part of the story in this argument.
How would anyone know what happens in the privacy of his bedroom?
We don't know.
No, I'm saying that the pasuk says nothing happened.
Nothing happened, right.
How would the public know that?
So the public won't know that, obviously, but the announcement went out that King David is sick and he needs someone, a home attendant, he needs a sochenet. It doesn't say he needs a wife. Unlike Ahasuerus, who's looking for a wife, he's not looking for a wife, he's looking for a sochenet. Right? I don't know if sochenet is right, is it the sochnut? That's a whole different conversation. But, right? That is the point. Now,
that she
That Abishag, we'll talk about that in a minute. That's the Gemara. But we have that Gemara. We'll learn that Gemara in a few minutes. Good. Now, this idea of maneuvering to become king and to prove to the nation that the king is incapable of leading is yet another similarity between Avshalom, evil guy, and Adoniyah. Because Avshalom, the pasuk says, would sit at the city entrance. And you know what Avshalom did when he sat at the city entrance? He would set everyone who came for mishpat, everyone who came to the king for justice, Avshalom would say to them, tell me, what's your argument? And the guy would say his argument, and Avshalom would say, you know what, that's a really good argument, but guaranteed the king's not going to listen to you. And he kept on stacking the deck and saying, oh, the king isn't honest, he's not honest. What he was trying to do is, and he was making it very public, he's riling up the people, right? Riling up the people is also why you have 50 people running in front of you, and you have Rechav Parashim, and you throw big, elaborate parties, right? Both Avshalom and Adoniyah are doing. What they are trying to do is do a popular uprising, and perhaps the unwritten part of the story, or the part of the story that's hinted at, is that they were responsible for this whole Avishag Hashunamis thing. Now, a few questions. So, what changed? What went wrong in their plan? So what went wrong, obviously, is that the Navi, Nosan HaNavi, and Bathsheba, they go to David and they tell him, you have to appoint Shlomo because Adoniyah is going to be king. And then David goes and David basically shows leadership. Right? In other words, what David is doing, he's showing, no, I'm not over a bottle. I'm still the leader. Right? That's like the aleph beis of this story. What also changes, though, requires a little more of a careful read. Who is missing from the group of people with Adoniyah?
Michal.
What? Michal. Well, Michal's not here. None of David's other wives are here, right? So that's for sure. She's the only wife who plays any sort of role is Bathsheba. But it's, in terms of the type of the role, the positions that line up. So there are Kohanim. There's Tzadok HaKohen is with David, right? And Evyasar HaKohen is with Adoniyah. Yeah, you see that? Two different Kohanim. Each of them has their own Kohen. David has Binayahu Ben Yehoyada. That's David's general. And Adoniyah has a general, Yoav Ben Tzruya. Right? Yoav is this complicated figure. Yoav killed Avner. Yoav killed Avshalom. David and Yoav, not on the best of terms. Yoav sees the writing on the wall. He's like, I got no future anymore. Let me jump to the other side. We've had generals who did that in history. Now, we'll jump to the other side. That's sort of Yoav. So you have a Kohen, and you have a general. What does David have, though? That David has a Navi, no? David has Nosan HaNavi. And Adoniyah does not have a Navi. What? There are tons of Nevi'im around, right? It's very easy to get a Nevi. You go to one of the the yeshivas for Nevi'im, right? You go, you pick a Nevi. But Adoniyah doesn't have a Nevi. Now, that means that there is no religious model in the Nevi form that he has. That's point one. And what's also really interesting is it's precisely this Nevi who's supposed to be a Nevi, I think of as being like a man of God, but the Navi who gets involved in like a political machination, the Navi sets Bathsheba up to go and speak to David, and right when they finish their conversation, he runs in, and adds like some more information. Right? So the Navi that David has is playing a defined non-Nevu'ic role. Right? You would think that a Navi is playing a role of spiritual, and if you'd ask me, that's what Adoniyah is missing. Fascinatingly, right, what David has and Adoniyah doesn't have, the Navi, is precisely who orchestrates the whole political maneuvering. I do not know what to do with this, but I find this fascinating. That bit of information, right, this episode, Perek Aleph of Melachim, is political intrigue. No? How will the king assert himself? Now, just to go one step further, usually when there's a fight for succession, so you win, one person wins, and that person is probably not on such sure footing, because I just had a battle for who's going to succeed. Is Shlomo HaMelech, who we know nothing about, really, Shlomo HaMelech at all insecure in his position? Not at all, right? Read the end of the perek. They tell Shlomo that Adoniyah runs away. He grabbed onto the Mizbeach, right? And Shlomo basically sends for Adoniyah, and he says, you could go home. I'm not going to kill you. No? If you are someone who is in the slightest worried about your future as king, you kill your opponent first thing. No? Shlomo HaMelech is not at all worried. Effectively, the transition from David to Shlomo is a transition coming from a strong king and handing the melucha over, and no one's going to question it. Because the entire perek is just getting David HaMelech to assert his strength as a king. Once he asserts his strength as a king, okay, King David declared his son as the heir, nothing to talk about. Of course, and no one will compete with Shlomo, he's the king because David did from a position of strength. Now, a few questions. If we're right, if Rav Alex Israel is right, and I think he says that Rabbi Nachum Liebtag said this idea also, that the Avdei HaMelech are people from Adoniyah's camp, and they're the ones who set up the whole Avishag thing, why does David HaMelech agree to go along with it? Right? In other words, they come over to David and say, David, you're not so well anymore. We're going to go and we're going to find you a Sochenet. Why the heck is David going for this? Like, he should say, I don't need a Sochenet. I have 18 wives. Right? Come on. What do I need this for? Why does David go along with this?
Maybe he wanted to show that he could overcome his Yetzirah.
So to show he could overcome his Yetzirah, David HaMelech had succumbed to Bathsheba. Right? She's bathing top of the... My kids can't get over this. I think most people, the first time you read in Tanakh, like, what's going on here? It's really hard to understand. It's really, really very hard to understand. And David HaMelech, in order to overcome his Yetzirah, what David HaMelech says is, you know what, I'm going to accept this Sochenet idea because this will help me do tshuva. And one of the ideas of having a Na'ara Yafav, making sure that she's really pretty, is also because to make sure that David HaMelech was really aroused and able to do something, but he still controlled himself, that's precisely what this idea is found in Chazal. Both Rashi and the Radak quote it on the pasuk of right that Bathsheba says somewhere Vahayisi ani uvni Shlomo chataim. Yeah, pasuk chaf aleph. Right, Bathsheba's plea to David Hamelach is that my son Shlomo and I will be chataim. And the word chataim is a hard word to translate. Rashi understands chataim means that we will miss out. We'll miss our opportunity to be the next ruler. However, chataim also might mean in the sense of sin. Bathsheba turns and says, you know what? Everyone is saying that we sinned. If you appoint Shlomo, that will be evidence that this was not, that what happened was not an aveira. And therefore, he deserved to become king. Now, again, one of the real differences between Judaism and our sister religion of Christianity is in the Gospels, they try to show how perfect the lineage of Jesus is. No? That's what they do. We understand that our Melech HaMashiach comes from some very questionable roots, right? Throughout, you have the episode of Yehuda. You have the right. Melech HaMashiach comes from very, very questionable places. The understand by Chazal that what Bathsheba is saying is that Shlomo is going to be the king, that proves that wasn't a chait, doesn't seem to be consistent with this other idea that we often see that the leader's bedafka came from chait. But okay, Zolzayin Kala Amad Abichata Inu Alatoa. That's what Chazal say. So these are some of the basic thematic points that I'd like to make. Maybe next time we'll go through these psukim a little more carefully. I just want to go through the Gemara here in Sanhedrin with you and make a few halachic points, because we said that this year was always a halacha year, and now we're switching to Navi, so we have to like throw some halacha in there, or else we're not Yotze, right? So Mishnah Sanhedrin tells me that Ein Rochven al Suso, the Emishdamshin Bisharvito. You're not allowed to ride on the horse of the king, can't sit on the king's throne, and you can't use the Sharvit, it's literally the scepter of the king. It's forbidden to use the king's scepter. You're not allowed to see a king when he gets his hair cut, etc. So then the Gemara writes, Amrav Yaakov, Amrav Yochanan, Avishag was muteris l'shlomo v'asura l'adoniya. Avishag is permitted to Shlomo. She's permitted to Shlomo because Shlomo's a king. Umelach mishtamish v'shavito shamelach. Asur l'adoniya dehedyotu. The Pasuk is going to say in Parak Beis that Adoniya requests permission from Shlomo to marry Avishag, to marry this young woman who was David Sochenet, and permission denied. The reason why Adonia cannot marry her is because she is Sharvito Shamel, she's someone that the king used, and as such, she's Asura, she's forbidden to Adonia, but she was permitted to Shlomo because Shlomo's a king. Fine. So then the Gemara tells me, Avishag Mayi, what's the episode of Avishag? Dichsev, Hamelach David Zokim Baba Yomim, they tell him, look for a young woman, and it says, Yivakshu Nara Yafa, and it says, Vanara Yafa Amaod, Vatila Melsochenes, Vatishar Sehu. Umra. So Avishag says to David, Ninasvan, let's get married. Why am I just this Sochenet? Why am I just this comforter, this help aid, whatever? Let's get married. Amar lo, so David says, Asimasli, you're forbidden to me. You're forbidden. Why? Why are you forbidden? You're forbidden because I'm only allowed to marry 18 wives. I can't marry another one. Right? So you're forbidden to me. Amrle. So Avishag says to David, Chasre leganva, nafshe leshalma naket. Fascinating line. Chasre leganva means when the ganav doesn't have what to steal. So nafshe leshalma naket, he makes himself to be a peaceful person. In other words, you're making up excuses, Avishag says. David HaMelech, you're making excuses. You're telling me I'm usher to you. Right? And that's why you can't marry me? The real reason why you can't marry me, Avishag is saying to him, is because Chasre Laganvi, you don't have the wherewithal to get married anymore. You're an old man. You can't do it. That's what she says to him. Amar Lahu, so David says, Kirul Batsheva. Call Batsheva in. Batsheva comes in, etc. And David proved that he's not such an old man. He's capable. And then the Gemara says, Bo re'e kama kashin gerishin, sherei David ha-melech hitiril o li'yached, v'lo hitiril o li'garesh. They permitted David to have yichud. Right? Ordinarily, a man and a woman who are not married can't be secluded together. Right? There's a prohibition of yichud. They allowed David HaMelech to have yichud with Avishag, but they did not allow David HaMelech to what?
Divorce.
To divorce one of his 18 wives, because divorce apparently is worse than the prohibition of yichud. That's what the Gemara says. Right? That's what the Gemara says. Now, this Gemara is fascinating for many reasons. One could argue as follows, that what Avishag was saying, we said we just want to make a few halachic points, so maybe Avishag is making a halachic point when she like is taunting David and she says, Chasir l'ganva nashir l'shalma nuket, that, oh, you don't have the wherewithal and that's why you're saying it's forbidden, but it's not really halachic. Maybe what she was saying is like this. You know what? She's saying, David, you want to have yichud with me. You want to be secluded. Maybe the only reason why that's permitted is because you don't have gevuras anoshim, because you're incapable of consummate marriage. And Avishag is saying to David, oh, maybe that's why you're permitted. Right? Maybe because... Now, that's a big question in halacha, whether a person doesn't... I once got this shaila, actually. There was a couple I was dealing with, whatever it was, that the husband's father when the husband's mother was niftera, so the father is alone, so they had to move into the house with the husband and wife. The husband's out of town all the time, and he's out at work, etc. So the question that the wife had was an issur of yichud with her father-in-law. Rabbi Willig was a meikel in that situation based on speaking to a doctor about that fellow. Again, it's not the most not the nicest topic, but okay, got it, fine. So maybe that's one issue that's going on over here. Another issue, just from the purely halachic perspective, is as follows. The Gemara says that they had to come up with like a whole fancy heter, that yichud, that David is allowed to have yichud with Avishag. No? And that required a special kula that they had yichud. Now, David and Avishag, apparently the pasuk says also that she was like lying in his lap. No? In pasuk beis, v'shachva b'chekecha v'chamla adoni ha-melech. The Gemara is never bothered by the lying in the lap aspect. It's only right. In other words, the kiruv basar, the physical touching component, is not the concern. The concern is the yichud. Rav Moshe Feinstein, one of his tshuvas about adopted children, it's a very difficult issue sometimes when you adopt a child, that it's like it's yichud disaster zone sometimes, because the child is not biologically related to the parents. So how do you have yichud? Right? It might be forbidden. So there's a tshuva in the Tzitz Eliezer. He has a famous kula where he was lenient on this. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zichron Levracha, used to tell people that you can't adopt halachically because of the Isser Yichud. But when the Lubavitch couple was having difficulty having children, they wanted to adopt, so the Rebbe would tell them, you know what, there's a fine Talmud Chacham up in Washington Heights named Rabbi Soloveitchik, go and ask Rabbi Soloveitchik the Shaila. So Lubavitchers always used to come up to Yeshiva and ask the Rav, and the Rav was not make on the Yichud issue per se. The Rav said, you know what, we could work around the Yichud issue, but you should still adopt the child and we'll deal with the Yichud issue some way. Okay, fine. Yichud is a very serious issue. What about adoptive parents? Are they allowed to hug and kiss their adopted child? Yeah, Lottie?
If the adopted child is not Jewish, which usually is, then there's no...
But, well, we convert the child. The child becomes Jewish. Right?
Only at age 13.
Well, no, they become Jewish beforehand, but the Jewishness really becomes firmly established. The child has the option of backing out on his or her bar mitzvah, bat mitzvah. I once had a quick case like that also. An adopted child.
Easier if it's a non-Jewish child that's living in your...
not, it doesn't really help that much, because once the child is Jewish, there's still going to be a prohibition of Yichud. And but it's very hard, like, to have an adopted child. Like, to raise a child properly, you have to hug and kiss the kid. If you're not hugging and kissing the kid, like, you're missing out. How do you, so Moshe Feinstein, fascinatingly, in one of his tshuvas, in Chilek Dalel of Evan Ezra Simon Samach Beis, Moshe Feinstein says, you know what, he thinks adopted parents are allowed to hug and kiss the children, because it's not the type of hugging and kissing that's really shalchiba. It's not like sexual love in any sort of way. He says yichud is more of a problem than the hugging and the kissing. And the adoptive parents can hug and kiss, and he brings a raya from this whole episode. That the Gemara's whole issue with Avishag is, how do they permit the yichud? Right? The fact that she's lying in this lap, that apparently is much less of a concern. Right? It's only the yichud issue. That already is fascinating. Early.
Didn't some of the gedarim surrounding the halachos of yichud take effect after Avshalom?
After Avshalom and Tamar, but that was before this.
Right, but
in other words,
what was the lag time?
What?
What was the lag time? Were those instituted immediately?
So you get an impression that they were. You get an impression that right after that episode, they institute a prohibition of yichud with a penuya. By Min HaTorah, the issue of yichud is only with a woman, with a couple who can't be together midoraisa. It's an erva situation. The Chazal instituted at that episode, that's the Gemara Navodah Zarah Daf Lamed Vav, but the episode of Avshalom and Tamar, they instituted the prohibition of yichud with a penuya, with a single woman. This episode is after that, and even though this is only in Din Rabbanon, still apparently the Chachamim had to come with a special heter for David to have yichud with Avishag. He tiril liyached, right? A special heter that was given, but apparently the issue of the kiruv basar was much less of a concern. So again, obviously there is. Obviously, there's much more to say about this. Maybe next time we learn. I'm not exactly sure how we'll do this. For me, this is still an experiment. I'm not sure if we should go through Perek Aleph in greater detail, or whether we should just continue to move forward and do like these types of thematic approaches. We'll figure it out. Honestly, if people have thoughts about this, I'm interested in hearing. But I thank you for listening, and have a good night.